I said, we're moving from the professional to the absurd with Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Boy, I got to do something about that echo. And hopefully you can hear me. And you can even talk to me if you want. The call-in number here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, is 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC. Voicemail, for those of you who are too shy to go on the air but want to know what's cooking, 427-4523. Snail mail address, P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Webpage, www.microradio.net/FRSC. Email, frsc@microradio.net or at cruzio.com. Take your pick. If that was a little fast for you and you want those numbers and addresses repeated, just give a call to 423-HUFF. That's the number of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, an organization I work with off-air, and we are pretty much on air and off air, and if there isn't my producer at the other end of that line, you can at least get a message machine and you can get more information later on some of those phone numbers. And right now, again, our phone lines are open and we are at 427-3772. You can give us a call at any point. In the studio with us, I'll be introducing him in a moment after a little bit of taping and babbling. I got some tapes I want to babble at you, so to speak. Is Troll X. He's a man who lives in his camper, and as you know, campers have become the latest menace, according to the Harvey West Association and the Natural Bridges goon squads, not to mention their friends on the city council and in the city manager's office and in the Parks and Rec Department. The entire safe zone proposal that had seemed to be at least a step in the right direction toward dealing with the disgrace of the sleeping ban has been tossed overboard by Councilmember Catherine Byers, or buyout Byers, some would say sellout Byers. I call her buyout Byers because of her willingness to dump a bunch of Hispanics in the street as long as they're given a check and a sayonara. That's what she proposed around the Dolphin Lee Apartments about 2 years ago. And indeed, her proposals are reflected by the Redevelopment Agency's resolutions. And indeed, there's a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday in which these issues, ranging from Byers' attempt to, well, Byers' successful action in crushing the safe zones, her new attempt to crush putting it on the ballot, putting the issue of sleeping ban repeal on the ballot, and, of course, the perennial situation of the Dolphin Lee tenants, the Residente Unidos Spanish-speaking working people who live in the beach flats at the Lee Brandt Street Apartments, will be coming up again on the Redevelopment Agency agenda at 5 as the sleeping ban, at least the question of whether to put it on the ballot, will be coming up shortly after 7 o'clock Tuesday night, July 11th, at the City Council. That's at 809 Center Street across from the main library and the Civic Auditorium for all you newbies. Show up there at 6:30. You'll get some India Joe's food. That's the India Joe's is a restaurant that's a very tasty Indonesian place. It's actually not the restaurant itself that's serving the food. It's the former master chef and former co-owner of India Joe's, Joe Schultz, who has made it his business and his pleasure to provide food to homeless people on the occasion of these protests. And indeed, we are planning a protest at City Council, we being Huff and an associated group, ROAR, Restore Our American Rights, a campers group, which I guess maybe now might be the appropriate time to bring into the conversation our man from the van, Troll X. Say hello, Troll X.
How's it going, man?
Not bad. Let's see. Say a few things. Let's see how your levels are doing.
Well, no. How's it registering over there?
You're pretty level-headed or level-voiced or something like that. So you just rolled back into town after being away for a while.
Yeah, I decided to come back and make it another home for a while and see how long it lasts before I get run out or arrested, one or the other.
And your vehicle is a self-contained unit. I mean, you have your own bathroom, you have your own kitchen, or what's your situation?
Yeah, I've got it all together, and I pretty much, you know, just go where I want and do what I want, and I just tired of getting hassled every time I try to park and sleep around here.
So you got back here really kind of in the middle of the furor raised by really a relatively small number of businesses in the Natural Bridges and the Harvey West Park areas. Plantronics and Texas Instruments, I guess, sent a total of 20 or 30 or 40 emails to City Council demanding that they revoke the safe zones, the proposal that had been passed, given a first reading anyway, on May 23rd, and then sort of left to hang out to dry, and finally strangled to death by Catherine Byers on June 27th at 1:30 in the morning when there were only four people in the audience, and to my view, it was done illegally because it wasn't really on the agenda, though I got a proposal from the city attorney today, a response from him, rather, that said, "You're wrong, it was illegally done. Sorry, Charlie." But anyway, that's neither here nor there. You're back in town, and how does it look to you?
Well, no, I haven't seen much yet. Of course, I've been kind of hiding and moving around just trying to keep, you know, from getting in trouble. I mean, I don't know how long it's going to last before they start jamming me again. It used to be pretty nice. I mean, we could camp, you know, and just keep moving around, not make a big hassle, you know?
Now by camp, do you mean set up a tent on the street and begin...
Well, no, just more or less stay in our vehicles and, you know, just keep a nice image. We didn't trash the place. Just kind of keep it cool, move around every so often. You know, just keep a low key, really.
Well, there's some who have been saying that Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center among them, the new Karen Gillette, so to speak, Karen Gillette was the former manager of the Homeless Services Center.
Mm-hmm.
He said that recently he was quoted in the Mid-County Post as saying, well, he thought this whole brouhaha about safe sleeping zones was a big mistake and that it created a lot of problems, and he was glad that the whole thing was over. Do you favor the idea of safe sleeping zones in Santa Cruz, or do you think that it's best for people to remain illegal and kind of dodge the police and try to keep a low profile and that sort of thing?
Well, I think it would be nice that we could have a safe zone where we could sleep at night without being hassled, because a lot of us work, and we do have jobs, and we are part of this society here.
Mm-hmm.
And being woke up in the middle of the night and being hassled and run around and run off disturbs our sleep, for one, so we don't get to get up fully rested and go to work. You know, so that really screws up your day.
What kind of work do you do, Troy?
In the building trades.
You're a construction person?
Yes.
And I guess you mentioned to me as we were coming on the air that you may have a job coming your way shortly.
Yeah, I just happened to be grabbing some firewood out of a dumpster. And the guy comes up and he's, "At your own risk there, guy, you know, don't get hurt." And I says, "Oh, no problem. I've been doing this for a while. You know, I'm in and out of dumpsters left and right because I got to load them when I'm tearing up places." And he says, "Oh, what do you do?" And I told him. And he says, "Well, I'm putting together a place here and I'm looking for people." And he says, "You know, I'll give you a call in a couple of days." So it might work out. I hope it does. I could sure use the money.
Dig it. It's interesting. We've had a number of folks from Vans here in the studio in the last couple weeks, and this organization called ROAR, which I've been at every meeting of ROAR, actually. They meet twice a week at Harvey West at 4:30 in the afternoon on Wednesdays and Sundays out there at the park, kind of in the vicinity of Du Bois or Dubois Street and Harvey West Boulevard. Are you a joiner of organizations? Have you went to one of their meetings? What's this ROAR all about?
I have no idea. I've just got back in the area and pretty much just getting into it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm finding out a lot of stuff, okay, about ROAR,
right,
and other organizations in the area.
Uh-huh.
And I think we really need to do something so people could actually live in their vehicles, because I've known people for years that have lived in their vehicles here. Some of them are family, some of them are single. And they all contribute to the community. So, I mean, I should see no reason why they shouldn't be able to park in their vehicles and live in their vehicles.
Well, of course, I have been loudly proclaiming that the mass of misinformation, or let's say concerns that have been expressed by some business owners and some business workers over the last month, as I said, a lot of it from these organized, I would call them hate groups, because they are really designed to try to eliminate survival sleeping for homeless people. And you might call them, they see themselves as preserving their own neighborhood. But the main complaints have been things like feces, urine, I don't know, dumping gray water on the street, hypodermic needles, disturbing the peace, using drugs in a public place, looking, parking violations. There's a series of complaints which have kind of been rolling into City Council. We heard on Voices from the Village on June 15th, that's the show that had a call-in show on Channel 27, and there was also at City Council at 7 o'clock on 2 days before that, there were a whole bunch of business owners who were, one after another, denouncing the safe sleeping zones. And my question to them and to the city, that supposedly the city staff is, well, first of all, why isn't the city staff providing dumpsters and porta potties out there to deal with those problems?
They should.
Yeah. And why aren't the business owners calling for them? In fact, the business owners were asking that they not be put out there, I guess, under the theory that if you have a bathroom there, then you're going to get all kinds of unsavory people using the bathroom rather than using the bushes. I mean, the rationale kind of escapes
well,
me.
Well, see,
there,
there's all kinds of people out in this area other than what, you know, live in their vans, okay, and motorhomes and whatnot. Okay, there's all kinds of street people that use the area, and some people trash it, some people take care of it. Some people, you know, can really make a mess real quick, and a lot of people do help pick up the mess. As far as these needles and stuff being found, I've never seen them.
You know, it's interesting. Nobody, I've never met anybody who's found a needle other than a conservative critic. And I'm not saying they're lying. Maybe they just have a particular sensitivity, or the needles gravitate to them, or it's some sort of water dousing thing. I don't know what it is, but, you know, you, I hear what you say, and I too, I've lived here for a decade and a half, on and off, and never run across a hypodermic needle anywhere. I mean, I've heard stories of them, but I've never actually
seen them.
Or
yeah.
talked to an individual who said, I found a needle. Now, I guess Tim Fitzmaurice has said he's found two needles. He's a council member on the city council. But again, when I asked the city manager, Dick Wilson, who's about to get a 27% raise from his $125,000 salary, I'd like to add at this point. And
I wish I'd get
I think
that.
That's a real big mistake. I think the man should have been canned a long time ago. And I think we should have an affordable wage here instead of having this kind of ridiculous disparity. But here we have Dick Wilson. I asked him, you know, where, you know, he said, oh, my departments are on the edge of revolt. They're on the edge of rebellion. My staff is about, you know, I said, well, can you give me some documentation of the different complaints? No, no, we don't have any documentation, or I don't have those reports. And I said, well, he said, so I just get those from other staff members. I just get verbal reports.
Well, then he should be able to lay his hands on them if he get reports
on. Well, that was the interesting thing. At this 1:15 council meeting on June 28th, the wee hours of Wednesday morning, when Catherine Byers moved to withdraw from publication the Safe Sleeping Zones Ordinance, she had no documentation. There was no staff report. There were zero specifics given by any council member about alleged abuses that had happened. And of course, they did not respond to concerns that critics brought up, which said things like, police have been directing people to these areas even before they have become legal. I mean, they were not even going to be legal until probably early August at the earliest, because it takes a month after the second reading of the bill for it to become law. But they weren't legal, and people were told to go there anyway. People, deputy sheriffs sent people into these zones. People in other parts of the town drove people away into these zones. I'm talking about the police department.
And drove them out of the city out to the outskirts.
Right. Well, no, I'm saying that they drove them from the outskirts into the safe zones, and mm-hmm. they drove them from other areas in the city over to the safe zones. This was before the whole thing was killed. And then they didn't provide porta-potties and dumpsters, and then when a business owner called with a complaint saying, you know, somebody is causing a problem in my area, they would tell the business owner, well, there's nothing we can do. Which isn't true, because all the other laws were supposed to be vigorously enforced. And the police department, if one believes with the business owner's accounts, were choosing not to enforce those laws. It seemed to me like this is a form of either inexplicable negligence by the police department or a political agenda, which said, let's make it look like shit, let's make it get worse, so that the city council then runs for cover and we have our good old sleeping ban law in place with no safe sleeping zones. And of course, the police like the safe sleeping ban law, some of them, particularly the higher echelons, because everybody has to sleep at night, and hence everyone, when you run across them, if they're sleeping, they are a criminal, and therefore you can do things like you can search them, you can arrest them,
you
can put them under, well, theoretically you can't tear up their property, but certainly that has happened in the past.
Yes.
If a person is wrapped up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night, that is technically a violation of the law, even though it hasn't been, to my knowledge, enforced a lot in the last few years. So it gives the police a powerful tool for harassing a class of people that is poor. And, of course, that we had hoped in progressive Santa Cruz was something behind us. Obviously, it's not. And what we find now, and I heard at the last ROAR meeting, was the need for people to, for campers, again, to get together, to organize, and for just generally supporters, not just campers, but people in homes who think this is a travesty, people who are, you know, who have been homeless, who have been outside, who have been living in their vehicles and then gotten to other circumstances, perhaps better circumstances indoors, more permanent circumstances, realize that a lot of people begin in Santa Cruz, you know, at the bottom in this situation, because the housing prices are, to put it
mildly, definitely outrageous. I mean, I can't afford to rent anything right now, even though I have the money in my pocket to, if I go to any other town, I could rent a place, you know, for like $400 or $500.
Let me be devil's advocate here. As Michael Hernandez might say, or perhaps Louis Rittenhouse, he used to say this to activist Linda Edwards way back when he was on the city council. He would say, "Oh, why don't you go? Why don't you move to Fresno? You know, what's your problem? It's cheaper there. You can't afford it here. Why are you hanging around?"
What's in Fresno? I mean,
cheap housing, maybe a good job, maybe.
I've been through Fresno and I've seen some real cheap housing that I wouldn't live in, for one. But I wasn't able to find any work. I am able to find work here from time to time around the area, enough to substantially feed me and house me.
You've been here
in
for
a vehicle.
About a decade, right?
Yeah, a little over a decade.
And you've actually worked at one time at the Homeless Services Center?
Yes, I have.
And you've kind of seen, you've seen me running around ranting about the sleeping ban for years, right?
Oh, yeah.
And now, you're not a person who's taken a high-profile role in activism. For instance, you've never been arrested for protesting the sleeping ban?
No, I've never done anything like that.
And
no.
Have you ever protested? Have you ever been in a march or demonstration?
No. I've yelled a few obscenities at officers as they drove by.
Right, but
you call
never
that
joined
protesting.
Well, sure it is. But I mean, you've never joined an organized protest.
No.
Right now, you found yourself sitting in a meeting of ROAR. I guess you were checking it out. Do you think that's become more likely that you would be speaking up to city council and lifting up a sign and doing that sort of stuff now because of what's happened, or less likely, or
I remember it used to be pretty mellow down there on the streets, and as long as we kept moving, kept everything under control, just kept like going in a big circle, they kind of pretty much left us alone. And now they're not, is the problem. You know, they're more or less jamming us, harassing us.
Now, can you give me some examples of what's happening, anything specific? Have you been harassed yourself?
Me, myself, yes, I have been harassed in the past.
But let's say recently.
Not recently.
Now, I did hear that Bob, one of the campers who lives in a van, was given the hassle by Officer Seeley, I guess Eric's retiring Sergeant Seeley's son, who's an officer on the police force, and who apparently is the kind of heir apparent for this Homeless Services Center position. That's not really a Homeless Services Center position, although the Homeless Services Center director, Ken Cole, has supported it. It's a position on the police department as sort of a homeless liaison officer. Originally, it was proposed and passed in this new budget as a part of the safe sleeping zones. It's kind of tricky because here's old Catherine Byers getting more money for the police department, supposedly with the police officer to do some patrolling, but suddenly the zones are gone to patrol, and you got more cops patrolling the same old zones, and of course homeless people are no more safe than they were before. But I recall, I mean, you actually got a ride over here. Bob gave you a ride.
Yeah, he gave me a ride down this way.
And Bob had a problem with Officer Seeley. Do you remember what that was?
What Bob told me was that he was sitting and talking with some other people.
This is a 60, 65-year-old man who's disabled?
Disabled, yes.
Worked regularly in Santa Cruz for a service station. You heard him on the air, I guess it was a week ago.
Yeah, he finally got to where he couldn't work no more, and right now he's right in the middle of too old to work and too young to retire. So he's more or less just going to have to tough it out till he gets something done with his disabilities.
Right. Well, what I heard happened to him was he was parked up near the West Side Safeway in the early part of the evening. It only becomes illegal after 11 o'clock to sleep in a vehicle. It's never illegal to sit up in a vehicle and be awake.
He was asked to move because of the fact he was in a wrong spot at the wrong time, and it wasn't time yet.
He was, it wouldn't really matter. He has a right, provided his vehicle is legally registered, provided it's legally parked, provided he's not violating some law, to be in his vehicle. And yet, Officer Seeley came up and told him to move along. And this is an example of really what the sleeping ban is used for. It's not used to deal with legitimate concerns and complaints. Officer Seeley should have gone up to, if he had received a complaint, which perhaps he did, although we've heard many cases where people have not, have been told to move along, even out, not just in the city, but out along the edges of the city to which people have been driven. If he had a legitimate complaint, you know, it would be, I think, appropriate for Officer Seeley to turn and go to the house.
The complainant.
Yes. And say, look, the person has a right to be here unless they are violating some law until, if they fall asleep at 11 o'clock at night, if this van is sitting here at 11 o'clock at night, and you see him go inside and then all the lights are turned out, you think he's sleeping, then you can call up and you can harass this man to leave your neighborhood because he's such a menace and such a threat. But until then, there's nothing I can do for you at this time, you know, unless he's engaging in some other violation of the law. But he didn't do that.
Well, see, what gets me is right there along the street, that's public property. Okay, if Bob was like playing loud music, okay, or making a big scene or something, then I could see the complaint. But there was no reason for the complaint, for just the motorhome being there on a side street. Mm-hmm. And a nice quiet area, and he's not a person that makes loud noise.
No, he's a quiet guy. I mean,
yes.
He talks up a storm, but he talks up a storm, I think, in an intelligent and voluble mm-hmm. way in conversation. And I think that more important than that, I mean, an individual citizen may make any kind of complaint she or he wants. I mean, that's the nature of life. It's the First Amendment. You have the right to complain, and you should have. But the police department is then using that as the basis for harassing poor people and driving them on. That, of course, becomes impermissible behavior, except in Santa Cruz, where apparently it's the basis for Catherine Byers' decision-making process, the council member who is controlling our city council and making it essentially a wholesale slaughter of the civil liberties of homeless people at night. They no longer have the right to be in a safe zone, not that they ever did, but it looked like for a time that was on the horizon, and she killed that dream real quickly. Now, what Seeley then said to Bob is what I remember his saying to me in describing the incident. Seeley said, first he said, "You're going to have to be moving along," and Bob said, "Okay." And they sort of looked at each other, and he said, "Well, you're going to have to move along." He says, "Yeah, okay." He didn't move along, but he didn't fight off the bat.
Yeah, it was the thing.
Right, he didn't fight with the officer about it. He just sort of sat there.
Yeah, sat there.
And finally, Seeley looked at him and said, "Well, I'll be back after 11," because Seeley, in essence, was confessing was he had no power or even right to be running around harassing people for non-crimes because the gentry, because the folks who live in houses and who hide behind their curtains and who are afraid to directly deal with situations and honestly acknowledge that everybody, that other people have human needs too. And I'm afraid that in many cases, this actually is not so many people. It's actually not that many, but apparently it's a sufficiently vocal minority to terrorize the timid Catherine Byers and her council majority, which is Matthews, Rotkin, Hernandez. And the four of them create this council majority. So, I think we have a situation where the police are
harassing.
Out of control in the sense that they are regularly violating the law. They seem to have had a political agenda to eliminate the sleeping ban, or at least there is good evidence for that, based upon the critics of the safe sleeping zones themselves. The businesses that didn't want it said the cops were not enforcing the laws and said they couldn't enforce the laws. And I've got to learn not to eat popcorn and try to eat it to speak on the air at the same time. There's also another reason why it's important for safe zones or the sleeping ban to be eliminated, safe zones to be established or the sleeping ban to be annulled, and that has to do with violence against homeless people. Have you heard any accounts since you've been back or been subject to yourself or witnessed any acts of violence against the homeless?
Not since I've been back, but in the past I have. Uh-huh. I mean, me myself, I've been harassed, thrown to the curb, as they say, given tickets.
You're talking about police violence?
Yes.
And how long ago was that?
About 5 years ago, I dislocated my shoulder.
Remember the officer who did it?
I'm not going to say over the air.
Okay, we'll try to get that information in confidence and give the officer a special commendation later.
Mm-hmm.
I'm of course more interested in recent stuff, though the history is important too. Here is a case of not of police violence against the homeless, and I wasn't really talking about that. I was talking about vigilante violence. We found Chief Belcher has acknowledged, after finally releasing stats that he withheld for so long, that showed that last year there were beating people who were outside at a rate of 4 to 12 times the number of assaults against people who are not homeless. And that is only reported assaults. And you can imagine what the
real
thing is.
How many are not reported?
I'd say at least one out of every five is reported.
Maybe.
I'm just guessing. You know.
Yeah, maybe.
Most people don't report assaults like that.
They're afraid to. Who do they report it to?
Right. And you report it to the police, then you get checked on your warrants, or you get hassled, or even worse, you just get
ignored. And then singled out.
Yeah, or you get ignored, and who cares, and why bother, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get called a snitch, and they'll come after you again, you know, that sort of thing. So the idea was, if people could sleep in groups, they'd be safer. If people could sleep well-lighted areas,
they'd be safer.
If people could actually make a complaint to a police officer, knowing that they couldn't be arrested for a sleeping warrant, they would be safer.
They would.
That was documented by the task force to examine the camping ordinance, the Byers Crone Sugar Group that did its 3-month dog and pony show about a year and a half ago, and it was also documented by the $10,000 homeless issues task force, which did its deal for the last year and presented its recommendations, and those recommendations have been deep sixed. So here's a little bit of segment about a a bashing of homeless people. It didn't happen at night. It happened during the day, but you'll hear about it. It happened about a block from the Paragolese in front of the Metro, and it was about a month ago. This is some tape I wasn't able to play at the time. I finally found it. Let's listen to this. Okay, it's about 6:25 down here at Paragolese, and we've just had a report of a man who's been, would you say, beaten or assaulted? Do we know what he was hit with?
He was assaulted. He was struck over the head. They don't know what he was struck with. It was by three or four skinhead types who accosted him and his friends.
Is it the Metro?
At Santa Cruz Metro.
And this is just right now?
Yeah, the sirens just went, the emergency vehicles just went by. Those would be the sirens that you just heard.
And I guess I should get down there. Where in the Metro is it?
Aisle A.
I have to go back.
Okay, let's go back there. Okay. So, you weren't a witness to this, but you came up shortly afterwards?
No, I came up right after it happened. There's a woman who apparently did witness it, and she saw where they went. She can ID them.
Run, Gardner, run!
All I have is a vague description.
And what was that description?
Very vague. Skinhead types. One of them was wearing a black t-shirt. The rest were wearing white t-shirts.
And there were other people there who witnessed this?
There were. Apparently the young man is quite upset that his friends didn't step in to help him. I don't know if there was a verbal altercation or what.
Let's just have a look here.
Council, 824-2000, regarding the consideration of recommendations of Santa Cruz's homeless issues task force, which is constituted...
I thought we had more of it than that. That's really just the sort of the beginning. There was a lot more tape. I apparently taped over some of it. But certainly we have had many reports, and there's been a lot of documentation, and it's really beyond question. The Sentinel itself did its one good story of the year on this issue on January 13th, and this year in the Santa Cruz Sentinel headline story about homeless people being beaten. But, of course, you didn't hear a word about that in City Council on June 27th, And what we have coming up is another city council on July 11th. That's next Tuesday at 7 o'clock. There's going to be your usual evening session of city council, which meets every second and fourth Tuesday down at City Hall across from the main library at 809 Center Street. And the folks are gathering to protest again, and I'm hoping that folks who are listening to this show will be down there. In fact, had we known that there really was going to be a real item on the agenda that involved withdrawing publication of the entire Safe Zones Ordinance, I think a much greater number of people would have stayed in the chambers. But there were two considerations. First, we were told that the item would probably be postponed, and indeed Rotkin tried to postpone the whole item, so we didn't know if there was going to be any item about homeless rights at all. And secondly, the wording of the item said that City Council will discuss putting on the agenda on July 11th a second reading of the sleeping ordinance. Now, if that is the subject matter, whether to put on the agenda on July 11th a return to the safe sleeping zones, then you're either going to vote yes, we'll put it on the 11th, or no, we won't put it on the 11th. Maybe we'll delay it further. But there's no indication they're going to take any action on that night on the item. And the idea that that was going to happen at 1:15 in the morning, I think, was as far from everyone's mind as San Diego. I mean, the fact of the matter is there were dozens, scores of people who were supporters of safe sleeping zones at the living wage discussion and also at the medical marijuana discussion earlier in the evening. Not one of those supporters stayed because they had no idea. I didn't even intend to stay. I thought this was essentially a housekeeping item. And I stayed, finally I stayed... I'm not sure why I stayed. But I was one of four people who stayed, and as I've mentioned in the past, I got arrested for pointing out to the mayor that he was repeatedly interrupting a speaker at the mic, and his response was to leave the chambers, and my response was, no, not at this time. I don't think it's appropriate. And he then had me arrested. Four police officers came in, directed me to leave. I did, and they then proceeded to end their meeting, although there was no real disruption. I simply appealed to him not to cut off speakers. This was the same kind of appeal from the floor that he had no problem with coming from one of his favorites, like Nora Hockman, who actually had quite good reasons for interrupting and for making comments from the floor during the affordable wage, the The conduct of the staff and of some council members was outrageous around that issue. However, when it came to me, of course, I was jailbait on that issue. And I guess you might say, well, you know, it goes with the territory, and certainly it does, but really it doesn't go with the territory to have differential policies towards people who are engaging in the same behavior at city council. It should be one law for everyone, one law for the big chunky guy with the beard, and one other law for the outspoken affordable wage activist, who did a very good job, incidentally, in arguing for an affordable wage, although I guess they didn't get a living wage, and it was postponed yet again. So that is coming up again. That is to say, the issue that concerns people who want to sleep outside is coming up again. Not the safe zones. That has been killed, although I am, again, putting together documentation to try to get a lawsuit filed against the city on this issue, since I think they violated the Brown Act, the Public Process Act, the act that allows citizens the right to know what's going to be on the agenda, to be able to be informed so they can know whether to be present or not, know whether they want to write a letter or not, know how to fashion their schedule to be there. And this was essentially, I think, again, because Sugar has done this repeatedly, ignored. And so that's not going to be on the agenda. But what is going to be on the agenda on the 11th is going to be the question of whether the sleeping ban should be put on the ballot, the November ballot. Now, that was part of the original law, the first that got a first reading and then was withdrawn, that not only would there be safe zones put into place immediately, but that the safe zones would come up for a vote in November. And now it's going to be coming up, supposedly, as both the safe zones for a vote and just a simple statement that sleeping is not camping and you cannot criminalize sleeping, which I think actually is probably a better way to go, because it's clearer to people. If you have to worry about which zone is where, that can provoke a large controversy. Although I thought, given the circumstances, the proposal that they be in the industrial zones was probably the most reasonable and offended the least number of people. But as we can see, that didn't matter to council member Byers, who is the key vote. And we have no idea whether it's going to matter any more or any less to any new council members who get voted in. But certainly, this is going to be a big election issue coming up in the fall. But on the 11th, the issue comes up in the evening agenda this Tuesday, should the sleeping ban be on the ballot? And I encourage everyone listening to get down there and demand that it be put on the ballot. Demand that it be put on the ballot, as the SCAN Housing Committee said today. They had a housing committee meeting at 9 o'clock this morning, which they discussed this issue. Either it be put on the ballot, or the city council move itself to deal with the problem by eliminating the sleeping ban forthwith. There's no justification for arresting people for sleeping, period. There is none. You can arrest them for all kinds of other violations. You can arrest them for camping if they're sprawling themselves all over the place in inappropriate areas, if there are legal places for them to go. But you can't arrest them for sleeping, particularly in a town that has a shelter emergency where there are only places for 28 people out of 700 to 1,500 people each night, as you will find is the case if you call the Homeless Services Center to ask them at 458-6020. That's a number to call if you want to get information. They're closed now. You can call them during business hours and understand that I'm not just whistling Dixie. And another number you should call is 420-5017. That's the city council number, and say, put the sleeping ban on the ballot, but more important, don't allow this kind of unconstitutional process to happen where you bring up an issue at 1:30 at night without adequate notice on the agenda. I would have been there to talk about it. I want to have a chance to speak on these safe sleeping zones. Use a legal process, and let's also hear what the real complaints are, and not just what the fantasies and fears are of a small segment of the population. Again, the number to call, 420-5017, to talk to the city council. And if you want to particularly talk to council member Catherine Byers, the number to call is 420-5022. And the number to call, if you want to be in on this conversation, and this is quite a conversation here on Free Radio, is 3772. 427-3772. Join us here on Free Radio, and let's talk about these issues.
Governor Lamb spoke to old folks in Colorado, little darling. Did you hear what the governor had to say? If you're growing too old in Colorado, little darling, you should die and get out of the way. Come and grow with me in Colorado. In the dark, we'll grow together, me and you. And when we grow too old in Colorado, little dark, we'll do what the governor wants us to. We'll stick our heads in the oven in Colorado, little darling. We'll go out together, you and I. We will each strike a match in Colorado, little darling. We'll blow ourselves Rocky Mountain high.
And that is Tom Paxton from an oldie from the 80s. This, of course, is Free Radio. I'm here with Troll X in the studio. And you've been around for a while, Troll X, and you're still sufficiently apprehensive of your situation to not really be too comfortable not only giving your legal name, but also giving your street name at the moment. I guess you're not feeling terrible.
Well, I'm pretty popular, and a lot of people do know me.
Well, they probably recognize your voice.
Some do, some won't.
Okay. We have to have a voice distorter here on the air.
Right? Dubber,
or
what
something.
Do you call it?
Yeah.
Scrambler.
So we can make sure that the folks who really don't want their identities revealed will have that privacy. What has been your sense of the struggle for civil rights for homeless people over the years? Do you think, is it something you've viewed with skepticism, something you've viewed with approval, something you've not simply had no opinion on?
Some with approval, and I've been a skeptic of a lot of it. Because it seems about the time we get something going, it's just ripped from underneath us. And we're back out in the streets hiding. And we shouldn't have to hide. We're citizens here, too. I mean, we pay our taxes. You know, we contribute to the society. I mean, why shouldn't we be allowed to live here?
Obviously, for my money, so to speak, it's, ridiculous. And it's, it's worth putting a lot of energy into fighting, and that's what I do, even though I'm not homeless myself and I rent a room, and I'm not in the position that most folks are in their vans. In Eugene, the way they changed the law was they got 3,000 pledges of civil disobedience. They kind of brought a big scroll to city council and then unrolled the scroll, and they said, here are 3,000 people who are ready to start essentially peacefully breaking the law unless you take some action. And the city council eventually took action. They appointed a social service person for $70,000 from St. Vincent de Paul, who instead of the police would go out and kind of mediate complaints. They set up 16 areas of 3 parking spaces each throughout the city where people could legally sleep in their vehicles, where there were dumpsters and porta potties. They allowed one vehicle to be in any driveway in Eugene, and they also established a policy of complaint only activity by police, and it was a real complaint-only policy, not as distinguished from the Rotkin bogus complaint-only policy, where police essentially do what they want and then say, oh, well, that was a high-use area, or, well, we had some complaints the other day, and we went in there. Police actually were reprimanded for the 4 complaints that came to court, and the 4 complaints were thrown out. It's also, however, I should be candid in saying, a more serious offense in Eugene. It is a misdemeanor. And, of course, in a way, that's better because it means every single camping ticket gets a jury trial. Although after the latest jury trial of Jerry Henry, I don't know how happy I am with juries around here. That's the man who is a street minister, talked to young people. Businesses didn't like him, so they cooked up a case against him, which essentially involved the fact that he was not leaving when first alarm security told him to leave and advising young people not to leave. And then when they continued to harass him, he would protest about this by telling people, and they said, oh, you're interfering with our business by doing that. It's hard to believe that they would get anywhere with this kind of shit, but they did. A jury convicted him of 3 or 4 counts, though they hung on the key count of conspiracy, or not conspiracy, but a pattern of behavior that amounted to a public nuisance, quote-unquote. And of course, public nuisance is normally like a toxic dump or some kind of building fault that would make it dangerous, or a you know, an old refrigerator you left out there that a kid might crawl into. That's a public
big
nuisance.
Big hole in the middle of the street.
Right. Those are public nuisances. Normally, yes. You don't have public, you know, it's they don't use a public nuisance statute against individuals. It's in a way kind of like it shows that it's sort of an anti-homeless sort of thing, because Jerry Henry looks homeless. And that's what I'd like to do now, is play a little bit of tape. I have not quite sorted out the trial. We've actually recorded most of the trial, and we're not allowed to play much of that because that is for personal use for a story that we're writing for Street Spirit, which is a homeless newspaper. And the judge specified it couldn't be publicly aired. But there is a section that can be publicly aired. We're going to try to get that to you. Right now, however, we're going to play a little bit of an interview about the Henry case with outspoken advocate Richard Quigley, who's one of the more colorful and, I think, clear-thinking individuals that I've met here in Santa Cruz.
I just heard...
We're outside the county courthouse, June 19th, 2000. We're talking to a man who's taking a cigarette break from inside apartment 2, where Jerry Henry apparently is going to jury trial, and talking to Richard Quigley at 11:15 or so. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, remember when I told you yesterday about the DA being real smart and he was going to let this Kovacevic character hang himself and then walk? Yeah, well...
Apparently not.
As usual, my hopes for these bureaucrats was just far too high.
Uh-huh. So what happened today?
Well, the DA sat there and discussed throwing some of this stuff out, and the prosecutor standing squarely in his little unfounded position that Mr. Henry's a screw-up that cost all those... It's come down to now, they are talking about the money. It's kind of cool.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The interest in this case, the point of this case, is retail dollars. And I was particularly stricken by that.
Summarize what the case again is for those who don't know.
Oh, this is a case where they're charging Mr. Henry with a whole bunch of stuff that they're trying to build into a public nuisance case against him for being down at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center and not fitting the profile of the people that they want for customers down there. And he's got long hair and a beard and doesn't drive a Volvo. What can I say? Anyway, so today they're talking about how it is that their business has picked up substantially since Mr. Henry's been out of that shopping center.
Well, that alone is a basis for a restraining order.
Well, they started counting in October. And so, of course, the fact that the biggest shopping season of the year happens within the next 90 days probably has nothing to do with anything. The fact that most retail merchants exist just for that 90 days probably doesn't mean anything. It just all had to do with the fact that...
Thanksgiving and Christmas? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I find interesting about it is that... damn, Steve out of jail. Cool, dude.
A historic
very
meeting.
Very glad to see you. Very glad to see
Steve
you. All right.
Richard Quigley shaking hands.
How you doing?
Doing good.
How you feeling? You all right? I mean, has made it through that whole fucking
shaking
thing?
Shaking hands with Steve Argue,
I mean,
recently out of jail
intact?
After... 7 months in jail for punching Officer Lefebvre to protect a woman and a child.
I know they thumped you around, and I assume that there's something being done about all of that. But your headspace is still solid?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. And if somebody decides to throw some woman on the ground, make her drop her baby, you'd probably go in there and get thumped and thrown in jail again, would be my guess.
That's right.
Yeah. That's one thing they don't understand. It is real hard to discourage people from doing the right thing by doing the wrong thing in reaction. It doesn't change things much, does it? Assholes. Anyway.
Continuing with the Jerry Henry case, Mr. 9 months ago.
But anyway, so business is better now, and it doesn't occur to them that the fact that they've changed the managership of the store would have anything to do with it. I mean, if you got a steam-driven bitch as a manager of a store, and you replace her, a steam-driven bitch that's obsessed with messing with everybody outside the store, as opposed to a professional businesswoman who's obsessed with making everything run right inside the store,
mm-hmm.
That generally, by all the business trends I've ever read, has a chance of improving business. But that doesn't have anything to do with it here.
Tell me more about what happened inside today. Was Jerry, I guess there was someone advising him not to do a jury trial, but he decided on a jury trial?
Yeah, and I don't know how that decision was made. He and I don't spend a lot of time in communication anymore. The emotional thing on him has drained our relationship down to where it's just pretty thin. I mean, I'm a supportive friend, but I'm not a close supportive friend because I can't go on emotional rides with him. It's too draining on me. I have other things on my plate. So,
well, what did you see happening here today? You said you saw the DA claiming that there were problems business-wise.
Well, I saw them getting closer to putting on a trial that they're ultimately going to lose. And I mean, I'm listening to the judge sit there on the bench and saying it's 25 years. This is already the longest restraining case he's ever seen. And that's not talking about from here forward. Uh-huh. So he's pretty explicit about the fact that they're wasting everybody's time. He seems to be convinced of that. And he keeps trying to make that point to the DA.
Judge Bill Kelsey?
Yeah, commissioner, I guess. They got it on
his... Retired judge is returned from the dead, or I should say from the retired...
Yeah, and as a acting commissioner. But anyway, all the indicators from the bench are that he thinks the DA's wasting everybody's time, and that's the consensus of opinion of everybody that knows anything about this case. But it would seem that our wannabe DA... in lieu of prosecuting the people that have violated Mr. Henry's rights under the Unruh Act. So away we go. I mean, it's just an amazement to me.
Nobody ever lost any money overestimating the sagacity and compassion of the district attorney's office.
Never. No. The DA under Ron Ruiz is every bit as political and every bit as corrupt as it was under Art Danner. And I at this point, my contention is that we might as well go ahead and put Candless in there. Everybody go out and vote for that bitch, because I think once we're in a position where they got the chief prosecutor in charge of political prosecutions, Kate Candless, that we're not going to get fed up enough to insist that we actually get a good DA. So I support electing Kate Candless for the sheer reason.
It'll get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, she will bring the corruption to a head.
Thank you, Richard. And that's, of course, the middle of last month. Since then, Henry's been found guilty. I think it's on 4 charges. And however, I believe sentencing is coming up in a couple of weeks, and there are some indications that he's going to get the minimum sentence because Commissioner Kelsey is not at all impressed with the so-called crime that he's been accused of it. Henry's going to have to do a $100 fine at least, and possibly more, but in terms of other conditions. But Henry is optimistic about things, and I guess so are other people. I, of course, am astonished that a jury could do this. And I guess it shows how, to me, because I witnessed the evidence in this case, at least some of it being presented, and essentially it amounted to kind of violent expressions of opinion from business people and police officers and wannabe police officers, rather than any actual behavior. And the interesting thing about Henry was he had tapes of many of these encounters that challenged the evidence that these folks presented, that showed that he hadn't said what they said he said, or in the manner that they said it had been done. And yet still there was only one juror who was really willing to hang on and insist on no... it was an 11-1 vote for a conviction on the key charge of a public nuisance, which was the basis on which this whole case was really the primary charge in this issue. It's a sad commentary around the 4th of July that this happened, and I guess there was going to be more of a discussion of it in the Mid-County Post. Jay Olson was doing some interviewing of folks. He never did quite get around to his story on it. He wrote one story on Jerry Henry, which didn't mention the $100,000 bail that Henry had on 2 occasions for nonviolent crimes, which didn't involve any destruction of property or any injuries to people. They simply involved offending business owners. I mean, it's amazing. But that the fact that he was held for 5 days in jail on one occasion, 4 days in the next for $100,000 bail, for this kind of behavior, which essentially involved a peaceful protest in front of the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, the Gottschalk's Coffee Roasting Company out there, to me was astonishing. Anyway, Jay Olson didn't mention it, but he did come down to Santa Cruz to interview some of the young people that Jerry Henry counsels. Jerry Henry, he's not paid to counsel anybody, but he's the kind of person who shares his experience with people, and he shared his experience with these young people, and they actually were very outspoken in his defense at the trial, and he helped one get off heroin, and he's kind of a very quiet fellow, Jerry Henry is. Here's a reporter Jay Olson talking to Jerry's kids, if you will, to use the phrase.
How do you spell your name?
RODMANWILLIAMS.
Your name is really Rodman, for real?
For real, it's on my birth certificate.
Okay, cool.
And
so you know him from the coffee shop?
From the coffee shop, and he's kind of a mentor figure.
Really?
In my life, yeah.
In what way? What kind of stuff is he? What does he tell you to do? What kind of stuff does he advise you?
He's an activist for. He's an activist for...
No. I mean, you personally. Not politically, but you personally, yeah.
Oh. Just as a person that's kind and that gives what he has and that, you know, helps everybody he possibly can. He feeds lots of people and just, like, a very wise man, has lots of knowledge and...
So have you talked to him, like, if you're going through hard times or something, something's not going right, have you talked to him?
Yeah. It's he's helped me out on a number of occasions.
And do you think that he's dangerous?
Not by any means.
Have you ever seen him hit anybody? Have you ever seen him get angry to the point where you thought he might?
No, never.
Why do you think that the security guards and the sheriff's officers are continuing to arrest him and harass him, etc.?
Because I think they live in a world that's very appearance-based, and so if somebody appears to be less than, undesirable, let me just put it that way, they just, you know, they think it's bad for business, they don't agree with people not looking exactly the way that people look in Gap commercials and whatnot, and so... That's just, that's pretty much the singular reason.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Kyle.
Hey, what is your name?
Kyle.
What's your last name?
Griffin.
What city do you live in?
Santa Cruz. Aptos.
Aptos.
Yeah.
And so you know this guy here?
Yeah, I know him pretty well.
From the coffee shop?
Yes.
So what happens there? How did you first meet him?
I was hanging out and... I just started talking to him, just got into long conversations about things about the world, stuff like that, the various states of the world.
Has he told you to use drugs? Has he told you not to use drugs? What kind of stuff has he told you about drugs?
He hasn't told me much about drugs, actually.
What kind of stuff do you talk about?
Life and figuring things out about, like, failures with the world and how fucked up it can be, and just keeping together with family and just surviving. General, it's a jungle out there, you know.
So do you feel, do you think he's ever been dangerous?
Not by any means at all, no. Yeah.
Have you ever seen him feed somebody that was hungry?
I've seen him feed probably 200 people that were hungry all at once.
What, were the Feed the People?
Oh, yeah, with the Feed the People, and just, I used to run around with him doing that, and, I saw lots of people get fed, including my own family, who was in a, homeless shelter at the time.
Really?
So we helped them out, so.
Tell them, though, what happened to you with your little brother and sister.
Oh, that's just... This cop, Thurber, that is used to be working in the Aptos Sheriff Center, comes out and harasses me and my little brother and sister. I took them for a walk in the forest, and we went into Safeway to get some snacks because I was babysitting them. And we're sitting down over next to Jerry, I'm talking to him, and he comes out and asks us all to come into the Sheriff Center, and I'm like, we're under arrest, and he goes, no, but you have to come in here. Separates me from my little brother and sister, questions my little brother and sister, and like tells them not to tell me that they asked them questions. Took me in this back room and like threatened to call CPS because we were hanging out with them, and they referred to Jerry as the nut. And we're threatening to take my little brother and
green
sister
back,
away
green
because
back.
I was watching them, and like we were with him, and they thought he was a child molester or some shit. I don't even know where they get off with these ideas, but they got some pretty wicked ones. Then the sergeant comes in and like says he's deeply sorry for his underling's duties.
Do you know what the sergeant was? What's his name?
That was Hartzner. He comes in and
talked to him. And who's the other guy?
Server.
Server.
The one that brought me in. Yeah, that guy.
Is he still around or what's
he doing? Is he doing desk work now or some shit?
I don't know. I thought he was taller.
So what, and then that was that, huh?
No, well, I mean, it was an incident, and they know. I'm assuming they have files on all of us that hang out there. I mean, this is pretty deep. Like, they have cameras there now, and full audio, and, that's between the coffee shop and the sheriff center, and they watch us. I mean, like, I don't know what for. We just sit there and watch them because it's like a camera.
Yeah,
it's just like,
right. Wow.
Who he watches?
Yeah. Wow, yeah. Oh, that story is that's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
While he was in the that station, I went in and actually have a tape recording of Hartzner talking to me while this is going on, and then Kyle comes out and makes the tape recording right afterwards. And I mean that that our deputies would be referring to me as the nut and stuff like that is just,
yeah.
But Kovacevic, I mean, if you look at the court transcripts, Kovacevic is I think referred to me as the madman or something, or that I'm a raving lunatic, I think. And I am psychologically disabled, but that's just facts, you know. I live on a deal where I get up every day and try to do the best I can.
That was a tape generously allowed on the air for publication or for playing by Jay Olson, Mid-County Post, who interviewed Jerry Henry and the other youth who was on the tape downtown in front of the New Leaf Market, where if you look up, you'll see a little camera surveilling the area right on the New Leaf Market. Apparently, New Leaf has no objections to its sort of being a snitch center for the police or the having a camera up there. Maybe they have no power to object. I'm just sort of remarking then this kind of increased police state-ish kind of quality that we see moving into Santa Cruz. It's, you know, it pervades, invades, and infects the court process, and it infects the street scene. And, of course, the whole thing is fueled by the drug war, which is actually a war on poor people, and it has nothing to do with drugs. It has to do with lifestyles. It has to do with the poor people get taken in, the people of color get taken in, the prison building industry gets the benefits, and it's boom times for the prison guards union, for prosecutors, for defense attorneys, for court personnel, for probation officers, you name it. It's just a bonanza for them. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris. In the studio with me is the notorious Troll X, who's keeping a watchful ear on all this. And he can answer any questions you have about sleeping outside. He's done a lot of it, does a lot of it every night. And he becomes a criminal every night after 11 o'clock for doing it. How does that make you feel, Mr. Troll X?
Well, you know, I wish it wasn't illegal, but, hey, I gotta sleep sometime, you know?
That's the kind of contempt for the law that I think shows the kind of person you are. You know, why do we have your kind around here anyway, Troll X?
Well, I've lived in housing before, and I built it most of my life, and I don't like some of the structures or how they're built, so I did choose not to live in them.
So you are actually homeless by choice, the feared and much berated lifestyle. Are you, in fact, but you also said that you would, in many ways, You are there because you had rent problems. You can't really afford the rent here, right? That's another thing you said.
Yeah, I'm a rubber tramp that I can't, you know, afford this housing because, number one, it's way out of my neighborhood on prices. Just to get into a place, I'm looking at like $1,200 to $1,500 just for a dive. Mm-hmm. And I can't afford that, let alone what I want to live in one.
Now, will you be coming to City Council on Tuesday evening, you think, to roar at the City Council, so to speak?
I believe I just might. I'm starting to get activist into some of this stuff. I mean, I've been quiet for years, which I shouldn't have been.
Now, there is a bumper sticker on my car that says, "Your silence will not save you." And In some cases, that's certainly true.
Well, I'm realizing that now.
It's, again, a city council meeting I invite everyone to come to. It's, again, going to be... I would suggest people start looking, come at 5 o'clock early, because that's what the next subject we're going to talk about, which is the Residente Unidos, the folks at the Dolphin Lee apartment complex that are fighting for a real affordable housing project rather than the straight demolition of their of the buildings they live in, which was being planned by the Redevelopment Agency and City Council under Tim Fitzmaurice. At least he was the lead figure in that plan. We're seeing now whether Fitzmaurice and the City Council will actually pay attention to the tenants, start negotiating with them, and pay some real regard to the concerns they have in terms of getting affordable housing that actually meets the needs of the tenants, not just the financial stats of Mercy Charities Housing, the sole service housing provider by the city, of the city, which has for the last 5 years essentially monopolized the scene. And not only does it plans the housing, it builds it, it runs it, and then it owns it. I mean, it's quite a racket. I've heard that, for example, Maynard Manson, he can build a two-bedroom house for essentially $100,000 less than it takes Mercy Charities, because he doesn't have the same administrative costs. So I find myself getting kind of irate when I hear that the City Council doesn't consider any other bids from any other groups, and when I really understand that at the center of this net, of this web, is Mercy Charities Housing making numerous decisions that strip the rights of the tenants. They set up this project a year ago without tenant input. They've been ramming it through City Council. They've been holding closed advisory committee meetings. Their plan, initiated, I guess, by Catherine Byers, was to demolish the homes of these people, relocate them out, and then only let a certain number of them back into the new housing. So they were essentially making people homeless, but they would have a nice little affordable housing project which they could report back to their San Francisco office that they were building and running. I guess that's a rather harsh and critical way of looking at it, but because they haven't responded to concerns of the tenants, and the tenants keep writing them and saying, what are your eligibility requirements? Why don't you want to build on vacant land rather than destroy existing housing and destroy what is affordable housing for a lot of us now? And they have no answers, or they kind of bounce the question back to the Redevelopment Agency. Now, actually, the Mercy Charity showed up at the Residente Unidos, the tenant union for the Dolphin Lee tenants, on Friday. And they showed up mainly because the City Council has been put back on the defensive by the organizing efforts of Residente Unidos. You may have noticed it in the Metro. The Metro did a big, long story on them. They trashed me in the course of that story, but that doesn't make any difference. Some of the facts about the Residente Unidos and the dirty game that the City Council and the Redevelopment Agency has been playing got out to the public. So Mercy Charities Housing, the first thing they tried to do was ram through the project, I should say. The City Council tried to do this. That didn't work, because there was too much negative publicity. So the next thing they did was they wanted to completely eliminate the project and say, you won't play with us, we'll just ignore you completely. That didn't work either, because Residente Unidos came to City Council and demanded that they get the affordable housing that had been promised them and been hung over their head for the last year. Now they're doing this let's negotiate deal, but it doesn't quite look sincere to me. We have an incoming call. Let's see if we can get some the public involved here. Don't give up hope there. Call back, caller, if you want to talk on this subject, or if you have some other subject you want to talk on that we can briefly interrupt with. Anyway, Mercy Charities Housing folks came to a Residente Unidos meeting, sort of mandated by City Council to talk to them, but they didn't bring any of the documentation or real answers to the questions that the tenants had asked for in writing in 4 or 5 separate letters. And so it was really kind of a, you know, pro forma visit, as they say. But I did tape record it, and I'm going to play you a little of it. Some of it's in Spanish, so be patient. Now, this is a Spanish-speaking group, but it's translated, so you'll be able to hear the conversation. The people at the meeting there are about 8 or 9 tenants. There's Nena Ruiz, who is the Residente Unidos representative, who has sort of been chosen by them. She speaks both English and Spanish. And there are numerous members of the community there, plus Elizabeth Vogel and a number of people from Mercy Charities Housing, who are paid Mercy Charities Housing people. And let's hear this conversation. You get some idea of what's going on between Mercy Charities Housing and how they deal with the questions from tenants, or don't deal with them.
He says that that they're going to be taking these two properties,
and
these properties here, and who knows how it's going to end up coming out. I mean, they could end up tearing this down and putting 100 apartments, let's say, and they could even move the street that runs down this road with reconstruction of a property, of a project like that. I work in construction. I build these type of apartments. I built these big complexes, and I see how the design works with them and how it's kind of institutional, that how they do it. And I wouldn't like to live like that. I wouldn't like to live in that type of housing structure.
No, see, usted está visto sycamore or near the group. Puede mirar. See, I...
Steve Farmer of Mercy Charities Housing, guy who runs the Mercy Charities projects in town, speaking in Spanish, and it will be translated shortly. And what Steve is saying is that, that if you're worried about the rules, that being an institutional setting, it's really the same in every other, it's the same here at the right now. I mean, you know, we don't allow you have your own requirements about bicycles and about how things should go. But the fact of the matter is, in some Mercy Charities housing projects, and this is my observation and what I've learned from other people, there is a very rigid series of rules. You cannot, for example, lock your bike up next to your own door. You have to put it in the bike rack. You cannot have if you use a tricycle, or if you use a bicycle, if you ride a bicycle on the property, that's the basis for eviction. You cannot put a political poster in your window up at Sycamore Commons. They insist on having a kind of an all-white front. There's a numerous restrictions which the tenants do not have input into, which are done by Mercy Charities housing bureaucrats. And these are, of course, not how the Dolphin Lee tenants live now. And I guess, you know, it's not that if Mercy Charities is willing to change its ways, I think that they would not be opposed to using Mercy Charities necessarily, although numerous things have to be worked out. I mean, if it's $100,000 more per unit to pay off the, dare we call them poverty pimps, I don't know, the good-hearted charitable workers of Mercy Charities who live in houses that these people would never dream of, and get salaries for demolishing their houses and throwing them out on the street, because that was what Mercy Charities was originally going to do, and still hasn't really backed down from that position. You know, they're now saying that, we could only build 48 units for 70 to 100 families because that's the only amount of money we had, and that's the maximum number of units that are allowed on the property and so forth. But the fact is, Mercy Charities designed this whole project. There were five different projects that were proposed, and the one that they wanted was their little favorite project that they dusted off, and they rammed through the city council with the help of Catherine Byers and some of their favored folks, Andy Schifrin, Don Lane, I don't know if Bruce Van Allen was involved, Sandy Silver, Elizabeth Vogel, folks who have, and they didn't come to the tenants and say, what do you need, what do you want, would this project suit you, what do you think? No. They just said, okay, we got the project going. Now, are you going to jump on board, or are we just going to dump you on the road? That's what their relocation expert, Michael Biotti, said when he came into town. He said, if you don't answer my questions and give us the information we need, you will simply not be a part of this project, and you'll just lose your housing for nothing. But if you act fast, we'll give you a little bit of money as we kick you down the road. That isn't, of course, how he put it, but that, in fact, was the substance of what he was saying. And, of course, he was saying you'll get adequate relocation money. Well, relocation cap is about $5,400. And if you have to use $5,400 to survive for 42 months in Santa Cruz with a family, I wish you luck. It's impossible. Probably impossible to survive on that amount of money for, what is it? I mean, I don't even know what the figures add up to, but it's preposterous. And it is a way the city wants to build its little show project, and doesn't care about the people it's displacing. Or that, at least, was what the tenants saw. They got together and they said, no way. And the way they have stopped it so far is they're refusing to give the redevelopment agency the figures and the stats as to who lives in what houses and how much income they make, so that if the city has those figures, they can immediately push for eminent domaining the property, because they can get together a replacement housing plan that they supposedly will deal with the situation, and then they can declare it a blighted area, and even though there aren't any houses red tagged or yellow tagged in that complex, thank you very much, but they can do so anyway, eminent domain it, seize the property, take over the management, give it to Mercy Charities Housing, and march down the road. It seems that they've been blocked from that because the tenants have said, we're not going to give you the information you want. You were able to sneak onto the Dolphin property and intimidate them, get the tenants alone, and get all the information you needed from them with a combination of promises, and I don't know if it was threats or not, but threats are not out of the question here because some of these folks are undocumented. Some of these folks don't have papers. They work hard. They send their money back to Mexico. They do the jobs that a lot of us wouldn't do at wages we wouldn't do, and they are there. For whatever reason, they have reached this point in their lives, and they have housing together. Now in comes Mercy Charities Housing, in comes the city council with its plan, but they're not going to consult these people, and these people have to worry that if they don't cooperate, they're going to get deported, or they're going to get, there's the pressure on them. I'm not saying the city council has said you're going to get deported. You don't have to say that. All you have to do is say, oh, what kind of papers do you have? You know, and then you leave the question up there and say, well, you know, it might be best for you to help, we're going to try to help you out, we're not going to hold your immigration status against you, just play along with the process. And of course, been playing along, some of you will get into housing and some of you won't. But right now, everybody has housing. Right now, everybody is in housing that is affordable to them. Yet, the city wants to destroy that housing. And then there's the question, will they ever build the new housing? Now, a lot of the tenants wonder about that. And I talked to an attorney today who was attorney for the properties that were demolished down at the Highway 1 and River Street. It's got this called the Gateway Project. He observed that the La Playa property was demolished and very slow in rebuilding. What the city did was it sort of waited people out, so they all kind of went away. And they didn't have to build so many units for people that came back, because the people just didn't wait. I mean, they weren't going to wait for 3 years to get housing. So what's really going to happen to that property if it's demolished? You know, is it going to suddenly Charlie Canfield is going to want to expand his boardwalk there? Well, that happened a couple years ago. That was a big issue, the beach south of Laurel plan. So anyway, the tenants are taking a stand and saying we want guarantees that there'll be relocation and return. That is to say that we'll get adequate money to relocate and that we'll get back into the housing, that you're not going to start saying, well, you're a felon, you can't come in, or, oh, well, your income is too much, you can't come in. No, if you're going to destroy our houses, then you will build us new ones and you'll let us back into them. That's what we want to know before we give you any information that will assist and facilitate this process. And it's a reasonable thing for them to say, and a good thing for them to say, and it stopped the city dead. So the city's next response was, well, screw you, we'll take our marbles and go home. You're ungrateful Hispanic people that don't appreciate. You're packed in like filthy sardines, and you just don't appreciate us and what we're doing. Mayor Sugar made those comments about filthy sardines. His specific comment was, if you want to live packed in like sardines in filthy, squalid conditions, that's fine. That was his comment. That's a verbatim statement he made on May 31st. Now, since then, he kind of turned around and went and talked to the tenants. And I understand he's coming to a tenants' meeting tomorrow night, for those of you who are interested, Mayor Keith Sugar, out at 124 LeBrant Street at 7 o'clock in the evening. I don't know how productive that's going to be. I note that the mayor has broken a number of promises to the tenants already. He had promised to bring their proposals to the city council, and on June 13th, he did nothing of the kind. He didn't do so, that I'm aware, on June 27th. And he hasn't been back to talk to them in the last 2.5 weeks. Suddenly, the Friday before the Tuesday City Council meeting, he's going to show up at the Residente Unidos meeting, and he's going to talk to them. You know, I suppose you might say, well, you know, who knows? But the fact of the matter is, if the guy wanted to work with the tenants, he would acknowledge his errors. He would apologize for not presenting the plan that he promised to present, and he would deal with that issue instead of, you know, ignoring them in his regal manner, which is what he has done. And by the way, Keith Sugar, if you're listening to this program, or if any fans of Keith Sugar's are out there and want to call in and defend his behavior, or who think I'm not accurately describing it, or who want to point a different dimension to it, call-in lines are open, 427-3772. Sugar has refused to be on any show thus far. I've never been able to get him on the air. I think he is afraid of an honest debate. He doesn't mind a debate where he can order me arrested at 1:15 at night. That's okay, because I tell him, you're interrupting a public speaker. Actually, he was interrupting my program producer, Becky Johnson, who was making, you know, her 3-minute spiel about why are you, how can you possibly eliminate the safe sleeping zones at this hour? But he didn't, you know, he didn't like the fact that she was directly addressing council members. And he used that as the basis to interrupt her, even though previous speakers had done that repeatedly, and he had nothing to say about it because they were making favorable comments about city council members. But when Keith Sugar hears booing or hostility from the audience, that is not okay. Well, I'm sorry. In the United States, a boo is as good as a cheer. Both of them indicate a sentiment toward an issue or an individual in a public setting, and that is equally permissible. And if you don't like it, get out of the kitchen. If you don't like the heat there, get out of the kitchen. That doesn't mean you order other people out. It doesn't mean you order your police in, as Mayor Sugar did, for example, in April when he pointed out James Ney, a sleeping ban protester, and said to police beforehand, "Arrest him when I give the signal," even before Ney had done anything wrong. And then when Sugar cut off oral communications prematurely and Ney complained about it, as I had complained about his interrupting Becky Johnson, he had Ney dragged from the chambers. His property was damaged. Ney is now suing the city for that property damage. Ney was held for an hour. Similarly with David Silva, and it's not clear if it was Sugar who ordered this, but Sugar was the one who Silva originally upset that the city council was unwilling to deal with the sleeping ban, said he was going to immolate himself at city council meeting, set himself afire. He said that on a Thursday before a city council meeting. But the next day, he went into a meeting with Sugar, and they worked out a compromise, and he explained publicly that was no longer in any kind of a serious proposal, that he had worked out another matter. He wanted instead the sleeping ban to be put on the ballot, which again is the issue coming up on July 11th, come to city council. And call City Council at 420-5017 right now. You have that option, oh callers out there, oh listeners, because if you have a telephone, use it, 420-5017. Tell them to put sleeping ban on the ballot as promised. Anyway, Silva was also dragged away. He was dragged away to a psych ward. He was dragged away to a psych ward and threatened as he went by police officers. Once the psych ward got him, they said, "There's nothing wrong with you," and they released him within 2 hours. But he was denied access to the city council meeting where he was going to speak, and it intimidated a mass of Hispanic people who Nena Ruiz had brought to city council to talk. These are people, as I said, some of them may not have all their papers in order. They're from countries where you get shot for talking in public places, like El Salvador. And when they see Mayor Sugar or other officials, whoever ordered that arrest of David Silva, having people dragged away who are their allies, it's a form of intimidation. So Sugar is going to be showing up at tomorrow's Residente Unidos meeting. And Sugar, and I think there'll be probably some other members of the city council are going to be there as well. I'm a little concerned about that because I think that there's really not much to discuss with the city council until they agree to the guarantees that this group, Residente Unidos, has asked for the last 3 months, at least. The guarantees have been laid out by them. And if they're coming specifically to discuss the guarantees, that's fine. But what they have said, what the council has said, is we want you to go into to allow our inspectors to come on the property. We want you to allow us to talk to tenants privately. And what happens in those situations is the city can intimidate individual tenants into giving them information that will then put the city in the position of being able to ram through an eminent domain action. Because what they need are particulars about how many people are in each place, what their income is. Once they get this, they can put together an action that will essentially strip the property from the current owners, transfer it over, and they can start evicting people. And then they can bulldoze the property. Now, the other thing that they can do is, and we're afraid they're going to do, is they can abandon the project completely. And that's not wanted by the tenants either, because the tenants feel they would like to have the housing refurbished. They would like more affordable housing in the beach flats. But it should be done in concert with the tenants. Now, you've been hearing me rag on about all this stuff, Troll X. Do you have any comments? I mean, my voice is getting a little boring out there to the audience.
Well, let's see, just pretty much about the parking situation around town. I mean, we're going to have to park somewhere, and hopefully we're not going to get busted doing it.
You're talking about parking and sleeping.
Yes, parking and sleeping.
Right.
And there are other people that sleep around, you know, outside. And the way I feel is, you know, hey, I live in one earth, and this is my home. Why is it illegal to sleep? I mean, this is my home. It's Mother Earth.
It's because a certain number of people have usurped power that should not be theirs, and that's why we have to come to City Council in numbers and tell them no way, no thanks. That if Catherine Byers wants to play little games with the police chief and the staff of the city, that simply the citizens have to reclaim the streets and reclaim the public process. And they have to say, you cannot make being poor a crime. You cannot make living in a vehicle, sleeping in a vehicle, if there are no other choices in this situation, a crime. And the reality of it is, that is exactly what Catherine Byers, Michael Rotkin, Michael Hernandez, and Cynthia Matthews are doing. And unfortunately, let's spread the blame around here, it's exactly what Christopher Crone, Tim Fitzmaurice, and Keith Sugar are not protesting. They are not standing up and saying, hold it, Catherine Byers, where's the sudden basis for the change in your opinion here? Why should people be denied their basic rights here? What are you doing? I didn't hear a peep out of these three council members on that issue at City Council. And of course, it was because they, quote, didn't have the votes. This is what they always say. I don't have the votes. You know, you don't need the votes to express principles, to express your conscience on this issue, and to talk common sense. That is what you do first, and that's how you get the votes, by talking common sense. Anyway, I'm encouraging you, Troll X, and others to come to City Council and talk some common sense. And of course, before the City Council began this merry-go-round bullshit around the safe sleeping zones, which they apparently had no serious commitment to, we had been planning things like a tent city. We had been sitting in every day at the council chambers, where we would go to the City Council offices. One person would sit for an hour, then another person would come back and sit for an hour. And we'd simply be waiting and saying, okay, where are you going to let people sleep tonight? There's a family out there. There's a bunch of families out there. Where are they going to sleep? Where are the dumpsters? Where are the porta-potties? Let's talk about this. And essentially, one person after another occupy those offices legally, not illegally. We've got an incoming call.
Hi. Hello. You're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Marilyn calling.
Hey, Marilyn.
How are you doing?
Good. How's life?
Oh, pretty good. And, yeah, but not so good for people who are out there in vehicles or camping. I just wanted to let you know that I don't know how widespread it was in the Poconet, but we heard last week it was happening, and someone told me this morning that he'd been at the specific area where he camped out for a year and a half, and this morning he woke up to four rangers at his camp.
And what happened?
And so he's had to move.
Mm-hmm.
He did not get a citation, but he had to move.
Now, was it because his camp was a messy camp? Was he, you know, filing a fire hazard?
It sounded as though they're just kind of going through getting everybody out, and so that's all I know about that, and I can find out more tomorrow.
Now, Marilyn, you're formerly a member of the Homeless Issues Task Force and also a worker at the Homeless Services Center at one time, right?
Past, right.
Right, and you actually had quite a lot of experience, and you've lived in Santa Cruz for how long?
Pretty much all my life, except for a few years off. Out of town for college and then back here.
And I guess you've been recently involved with this ROAR group, Restore Our American Rights?
Right. Yes, mm-hmm. I think it's a good thing that's happening. And we really need to get a lot of people involved, and then I think it's the only way it's going to work, that a grassroots coalition of people tackle this problem and get the solutions done, because the City Council...
It ain't doing nothing.
No, there's nothing happening there. There is no political will, whatever will. There's no humanness in any of them enough to really, you know, be gutsy enough to do what has to be done, the right thing. And I don't see anything coming from them.
I think you have to make the cost of not doing something so high that they have to do it. Like we mentioned in Eugene, the scroll with 3,000 people committed to civil disobedience, mm-hmm. or a tent city that is set up at City Hall that goes on and on and on, or a lawsuit that, you know, or all these things at once.
I think the lawsuit's probably the only thing that's going to get them if you hit them in their pocketbooks. I don't know. There's got to be a way of proving... where I believe in Austin, Texas, this is what has happened, that they have actually come to the decision that it's unconstitutional to criminalize people for sleeping.
The sleeping ban sections of their camping ordinance were thrown out in Austin, Texas about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so now if in Texas they can do this, we're so enlightened out here in California.
I know, we got Mike Rutkin. I think we should send Mike to Texas
we've got
to do
these enlightened folks.
Quick survey.
They need to put their money where their mouth is, or at least their heart where their mouth is, and do something that's really going to, you know, change stuff.
Have you been listening to Troll X here in Maryland or not?
I'm sorry. So
have you been listening to my guest on the show?
Yes, I have.
Did you want to ask him a question, or did you
You know, I just came in, and I just got a little bit of it, but I wanted to tell you something else before I forget.
Sure, please.
If I don't tell you something. this is kind of an interesting thing, a little incident that happened. A bunch of garbage was dumped all over out at the Homeless Garden Project last night, and it was discovered this morning.
Mm-hmm.
It did wreck some plants, and it was just there. I mean, it was in an area where there were plants. And when the police were contacted about this to see what was happening, they found mail. And so they found that the people who dumped this garbage at the Homeless Garden Project were people who were housed,
mm-hmm.
who have, you know, access to garbage cans.
Mm-hmm.
Access to, you know, probably a lot more. So, you know, it goes to show you that you wonder how much of this garbage on the west side that was dumped around was maybe dumped around by west side neighbors to maybe make it look like it was really bad. You know,
Sure, or how much was dumped because there were no porta-potties or dumpsters out there to deal with real sanitation problems that will continue. And you're in a situation where at this time of the year, more people come into town. Rainbow Gathering was just starting about a month ago, and people were coming through this area, not necessarily intending to stay, but passing through. And the cops were moving people into the safe zones, even though it wasn't legal to be in the safe zones yet.
Right. They never really did make that right.
No, and see, these issues that were not clearly addressed by the city council on June 27th when they pulled this Catherine Byers sneak move, and I'm thinking it's time for us to go back on July 11th and demand a real accounting. That's what I think mm-hmm. we got to do, and that's Tuesday coming up.
Because what they said they were going to do, give it a trial. They never got to that point.
No,
so
of course.
How can they say it failed when they never did the proper things to ensure that it would really probably be successful?
It's like Alice in Wonderland, sentence first and then trial.
Yeah, really backwards. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, people have dispersed throughout the community now. They're not parked in these areas anymore. And you don't see them all in one spot. I mean, so why not just decriminalize it? If that's the thing,
which
you
is
know what
I'm
saying, it doesn't even make sense.
Which is what they did in Eugene, according to the reports
right.
I'm getting both from people who've lived there and also from this man, Wayne Ford, who spoke on the air a week and a half ago. Okay. And he sent a letter to city council that's quite eloquent. I encourage people to look at the city council letters. You can just go in and look at the file in there. He said that, you know, there have been only 4 tickets in 3 years, all of them thrown out. They have instead this private process whereby if there's a problem, the St. Vincent de Paul service person goes out and talks to both the camper and the complainant, and they work it out. And in fact, you know, and also they have their extra 16 parking places. And it's in a much bigger city of 150,000, and it also has to do with not just people in vehicles, but also people outside. And I'm surprised to hear that. I'd heard that they hadn't dealt with people who are just without vehicles and without anything but their feet and their backpacks. But I think you're right. Citywide, it's a much better idea to go after it.
Yeah.
And if there are real problems that come up, well, there are real laws that can be used
right.
to deal with the real problems.
For everything that people don't want to deal with, if there's drunk in public, they've got to, you know, if there's littering, there are laws to cover all that. It's the sleeping part is absurd. And, you know, and when I see that they set it up in only 2 areas of town, it was like setting it up for failure anyway, because if you get a whole bunch of people in 2 areas, you're going to have people who don't want to see that many people in just 2 areas.
Let me ask you a more difficult question, Marilyn.
No,
because
don't do that to me.
Well, I don't know. This might be good for you, because you've been around. I heard the Homeless Issues Task Force was actually trying to get together again informally last Thursday. I think Lucy Kimmitzer met, and Linda LeMaster was supposed to be there, Tom Nadelsky. These are folks who met, of course, throughout the year and actually got together some good recommendations, and on some they flopped as well. But, for example, one of their first recommendations was to eliminate the entire camping ordinance, not just the sleeping sections, but the entire thing, because you can't make it illegal for people to put up a tent in a situation where it's a survival situation, as it is for people at night when they have to sleep and protect themselves from the elements. But anyway, the question I have for you has to do with what's coming up on July 11th, which is the issue. They've already, of course, dumped the issue of the sleep zones. They, without any debate, at 1:30 in the morning, without any real public process or even a proper agendizing. But at least on Tuesday, they're coming up with the issue of should this be on the ballot. What's your view? Should the sleeping ban be on the ballot today? The homeless. The Homeless and Housing Subcommittee of SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, said and voted yes. We want this on the ballot. We feel that it should be on the ballot, and either it should be on the ballot or they should immediately move to annul the sleeping ban citywide here in Santa Cruz. They either have to deal with it as a city council or they got to put it on the ballot. What's your view?
Oh, well, you know, I'm kind of wavering back and forth. I think it should be on the ballot because I think the community needs to... There's a lot of really human, good, kind people in this community, and hopefully a lot of them vote. If it gets there and people see, if they really know the real facts, if during the interim between now and November the real facts come out so that the community can know what's going on, really going on, and get educated as to what's going on with homeless people and the real facts, not what city council or the police department wants to shove down their throats. I think that it would have a chance of getting thrown out just because a lot of people don't even know. When I talk to people about this in the community, that they aren't even aware that this exists.
Right.
That people are getting tickets for sleeping, that it's a real problem for people who don't have homes. They don't even realize there's that many people out there. It's really unreal. You know, and they think that this homeless shelter, oh, well, there's a shelter. Oh, that takes care of everything. Well, they really don't know what really is going on, that it does not take care of everything. And, you know.
What about the people out at the Homeless Garden Project? I know you've been working out there. Are they concerned about the situation? Are they likely to be coming to City Council at 7 o'clock on July 11th?
Are you talking about staff people or people who work there?
Both.
Both. There are some, you know, at a time when the City Council is meeting, it's a time when people...